It's time to get ugly.
You're listening to Ruskin and Zach.
Ruskin and Zach. Happy to have you with us here today and each and every day. And now we are happy to go to the Williams Tractor Hotline. Hunter Yurecek is there, Arkansas Director of Athletics. Hunter, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for taking time for us today.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. Thank you. Thank you so much. So we were talking a little bit in the first segment here of the hour about the plan and the different groups of when people will be coming back, students will be coming back. Just kind of take us through the process of putting this plan together, and as you said earlier today, putting a plan together that's specifically for the University of Arkansas.
Well, guys, you know, we've been working on this plan for the last 4, 5, 6 weeks as we wrapped up and knew there was not going to be any further action for 2019-20 and started to look ahead at what the upcoming year would look like. And the first part of that is we had to get our student athletes and our staff back to campus. And so this plan, as the NCAA Council allowed for voluntary activity beginning June the 1st, and then the SEC presidents and chancellors voted for that to be June the 8th. We've got a phased approach by which we're going to bring our student athletes back beginning on June the 8th, beginning with our fall sports, football, soccer, volleyball, cross country, and along with men's and women's basketball. And then we've got some 2-week increments where we'll bring back spring sports, our incoming freshmen, and then finally, our winter sports is that second group. Spring sports would be the fourth group, and then intermingle, and there in the middle would be our incoming freshmen. And you know, there's this plan is roughly about 30 pages. It talks about how we're going to disinfect and sanitize our facilities this weekend, and then on an ongoing basis, the participation of our student athletes in cleaning the equipment they use, the education and protocol that our student athletes will have to take. There's mandatory physicals. They'll be required to wear a mask in and out of the facilities. Obviously, will not be required to wear those while they're working out. There's a daily screening process. We've made so many changes to the daily lives of our student athletes, and it's all for their health and safety and their well-being as they return to campus. So I can't, you know, this is a collaborative effort from our sports performance team, our facilities and maintenance staff. We've involved the environmental health and safety officials on our campus. It's been seen by staff at UAMS as well as the Arkansas Department of Health. And it's tailored to what we believe is appropriate for the University of Arkansas and the state of Arkansas. There'll be plans across the Southeastern Conference and across the country that will vary in how they're implemented and who tests and who doesn't test and are there antibody tests and things of that nature. But this is what we believe is in the best interest of our student athletes here at the University of Arkansas.
Obviously, this is huge news for Razorback fans who were excited to hear athletes getting back on campus because that gives us hope that there will be a fall sports schedule. Have you had a chance to sit down with any of the student athletes and sort of take their, you know, get their take on all of this? How are they feeling coming back to campus?
Well, we sent out a question and answer document to student athletes and their parents early last week, and then we've had a series of Zoom calls in the evenings with student athletes and their parents to answer any of their questions. We've talked to our head coaches who have been in daily contact with our student athletes over the past 10 weeks, and our student athletes are anxious and excited to return. I think they have a great level of confidence, as do their parents, in the plan that we have in place. You can already tell the activity around campus that student athletes and students in general are starting to migrate back to the areas things across our state begin to open back up. So it's been kind of a ghost town here, especially right around campus, and you can start to see the energy start to pick up now.
We're talking with Hunter Yurecek here on Ruskin and Zach. A couple of questions here. Number one, can you get into, maybe not too detailed, but just kind of give us some broad strokes on if there or when there's a positive case, how will that be handled to prevent further infection? And secondly, how much, I would imagine it's, you guys can't report who's positive because the HIPAA restrictions are in play there as well, are they not?
That's correct. And if we have a student athlete that tests positive, we would isolate that student athlete, whether that's in their residence hall or their apartment. We have some measures in place where Our nutrition staff would make sure that they have the proper food that they need on a regular basis. Our athletic trainers and medical staff would check in on them. They would receive all the care and the attention that they need with the appropriate distance measures. And then we would work with the Arkansas Department of Health to do the appropriate contact and tracing and test the appropriate individuals and, as needed, quarantine those individuals. So I think we have a really good plan in place to deal with a student-athlete that may test positive. And quite candidly, we feel that there's a high percentage that a student-athlete at some point in time during the next months will test positive here on our campus and across campuses within the Southeastern Conference.
Obviously, you put a lot of thought into this plan, and you've talked to other athletic directors within the conference. Is your plan similar to theirs with certain tweaks for Arkansas-specific events, or is this something that you struck out on your own and did this, you know, basically put this in place with your staff?
Well, you know, I think it's all of the above. Yes, we have consulted together as athletic directors, but we've also, again, consulted with people across our state, the Arkansas Department of Health, Environment, Health, and Safety Group on campus, and then there was an SCC Medical Task Force that had a representative from each campus community that was a part of that, and they provided some recommendations to us last week. And so we've taken all of the advice we have received in the council from federal and state agencies and the local agencies, and we have put that together, formulated a plan that works for us. So they will, again, we're not going to test all of our student athletes upon their return to campus. You will see that there'll be other schools that will do a COVID test, some are doing antibody tests, some are doing a combination of both. What the SEC medical working group, as well as those close to us in the medical field, advise that it's not necessarily practical to test all of their student athletes returning. Where we will test is we will test symptomatic student athletes after a daily and rigorous screening process, as well as student athletes who are coming from any of the identified hotspots, indoor, international locations.
We're talking with Hunter Yurecek here on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. What's being done to keep coaches and staff? We've spent a lot of time on the players, but some of these coaches could be into that kind of risky age area that they talk about in terms of possible infection. How do you keep the coaches and the staff members safe as well?
Well, we've got a similar plan for our staff and their return to work, and many of our staff will return this Monday, June the 1st, as will some faculty and staff on our campus. And we have some very similar protocols for how we sanitize and disinfect our office environments. We will wear masks in and out of our facilities. And when we're going down the hallways, we will continue to have Zoom meetings as they are practical, even if we're in the offices. And so we have some certain guidelines that our staff will also follow. Because we do have staff of varying ages from anywhere from in their early 20s to their early 70s, and we've got to make sure that we're looking out for each other.
Obviously, one of the big questions will be when September 5th rolls around, will there be fans in Razorback Stadium? How do you go about walk me through this process, because this has got to be one of the more difficult decisions you've got to make when you're talking about a stadium that could be a third full.
Sure. Well, you know, right now, our plan is it's not going to be a third full, that it's going to be full. And that's what we're working towards now. We're going to have some practical guidelines that are in this initial plan. It's, you know, we shuttle approximately 10,000 fans from outlying lots. And so how do we shuttle those fans in now, and how does that look different? And when our fans are queuing in line to get into the game, what does that look like? And when they're queuing in line for concession stands, and how we disinfect the stadium and sanitize it prior to the game and during the game, and some of those measures. And then that last piece of that puzzle will be, okay, we're going to do that for how many fans? And that will be something that we're going to wait till the latest date possible to determine what that looks like. I think we can make better decisions as an industry if we make those decisions the closer we get to the season. So what we're planning to play Nevada September 5th. Nevada's planning to be here. We're planning to go to Notre Dame on September the 12th. What that venue looks like on September 5th and September 12th, that still remains to be determined, at least here at the University of Arkansas.
Is it still yet to be determined if fans will have to wear masks?
I would say yes. I would say that That is not a definitive that fans would have to wear a mask, but here's the way I think of mask. I've got four. I'm trying to use them as somewhat of fashion statements, and people that are a great deal smarter than me are recommending that I wear a mask. So I'm going to wear a mask. And here's what I don't want to happen is I don't want there not to be a football season because I don't want to wear a mask. And so to me, wearing a mask is a small sacrifice to make sure that we have a college football and a college soccer and a college volleyball season. If that's a sacrifice I have to make, I'll wear a mask 24/7.
Do you have
because I think that...
I'm sorry. Do you have an anthracite Razorback mask?
Right now, I do not have an anthracite Razorback mask, but I have a couple of really cool red Razorback masks.
Okay. All right.
What's the plan? If the plan is to have a full stadium on September the 5th, what's the plan for screening fans on their way in?
That's still to be determined, and we're going to need to take some guidance from the Department of Health and what that screening looks like. You know, we've heard that, okay, we need to take temperature readings. Does temperature readings really make sense on September 5th when it could be 95 degrees and you just walked 100 yards to get to where you're going to have your temperature taken? And is that going to give you a true read that you're symptomatic towards COVID-19? So what that screening process would look like, I think that the details of that are still yet to be determined. We're looking at things, again, is how we queue people in line to get into the stadium, and how do they ride on the shuttle buses, how they queue in line for concessions and things of that nature, and how do we create some natural social distancing in those areas.
Have you been privy to any of the information from, say, NASCAR? And you know, they've pulled off two events with people in their in the infield.
And you guys working. Still there?
Yes, sir. You there?
Talking with Hunter Yurecek. Hunter, are you with us still?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Have you had any sort of information that you've received from, say, NASCAR or been watching what they do as far as getting people in and out of these sites? I'm curious how, like, officials, will you test them? Will they be tested independently? How's that going to work?
Again, that's part of that game day plan that has still not been flushed totally out. Obviously, we will, you know, what I would hope is that in addition to NASCAR, that you have some other professional leagues in the NBA, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, that get restarted, and we can take some best practices from what they learn and re-engaging fans in their venues and take that as we continue to build a plan for our venues. But, you know, one of the things that our conference office has been really good at is they've been on some calls with the Commissioner Sankey, with some of the commissioners of these major sports leagues, and there is an exchange of ideas, and we all understand how important sports is to our society, whether that's youth sports, high school sports, college sports, or professional sports. We all want sports back, and you know, we need to go about it the right way that everybody involved is safe and confident in that return. The coaches and the athletes and the fans and those that have to work in those venues.
We have seen across college sports programs being cut. There's even whispers of leagues merging because of the economic ramifications of this. Yet Arkansas has not had any major cuts that we know about, no programs lost or anything like that. What is the factor here where some places have had to do this, and Arkansas has kept everything the way it is so far?
I will say I will give credit to my predecessor and the CFOs and our fans, and we've been able to build a strong budget, and in the process of building a strong budget, we've built a strong reserves both within the Department of Athletics and in our athletic foundation. And that's allowed us to, you know, get to the finish line of this current fiscal year without having to make any significant changes. And we submitted a budget that the Board of Trustees approved last week that has our budget for the next fiscal year. Now, with that budget for the next fiscal year, guys, it has us playing a full football season and a full basketball season and a full baseball season. And obviously, if those scenarios don't work themselves out, we're going to have to address some revenue shortfalls within our budget at that point in time. But to date, and we've been in a really strong financial position because of the work that so many people have done over the last decade here within our athletic program and our athletic foundation and at our university, that we haven't had to make those significant changes and some really tough decisions that others have had to make.
Just sitting here listening to you and looking at the plan that you guys have outlined, I mean, tell me if I'm misreading this, but I think you personally feel very confident that barring something unforeseen, you're going to get 12 games in this fall as far as football goes. Basketball should start on time, and we should see a semi back to normal sports cycle.
Yeah. Guys, I don't know as a leader of this department in the state of Arkansas any other way to think but to be positive and to look forward that we will have a full football season, soccer, volleyball, basketball. I think that's in front of us. I think that you have a commitment from our board several weeks ago to open up campuses across the UA system, across this state. I know that Chancellor Steinmetz is committed to opening up the university for on-campus learning and on-campus classes this fall, and we're committed to opening up our athletic program in the same way.
We're talking with Hunter Yurecek here on Ruskin and Zach. Do you wonder about when things go back to normal, are people a little slower to maybe criticize a coach or criticize a decision because people have missed sports for so long that Maybe some of the daggers, some of the arrows that come out will be a little less sharp because, well, it's sports and it's here, so I won't complain about that this time around.
Yeah. Guys, I sure would hope so. I mean, this season, regardless of the sport, regardless of the level, is going to have a huge asterisk, by my opinion, in the history books. And it's going to be the COVID recovery season. I mean, you just talk about college athletics and the springtime for so many of our sports, and in the summer are when student athletes are developing their bodies and they're developing their craft and honing their skills and preparing for the upcoming seasons. And for the most part, student athletes have missed that. Professional athletes have missed that. And so I think that the level of play will not be what we're used to as we get into this year because of that. And I think we've had to be less critical and judgmental on our coaches, but hey, sports are sports, and that's what makes them fun, that we can all be, Monday morning quarterbacks around the water cooler. And if we can get it back, maybe we'll be less critical, but boy, we're still going to talk about it, aren't we?
Yeah, no question.
No question. No.
Who's the coach on your staff that you cannot wait for that coach's season to start so they will get out of your office and leave you alone?
You know, I love all of our coaches, but I can tell you, and all of them are ready to roll. But I'm excited for Sam Pittman and our football staff to get rolling. I mean, he has worked really, really hard over the last 10 weeks to continue to engage our current players and build relationships with them, to continue to recruit, to install an offensive virtual conference calls and a defense. And I'm really excited for him to get started because I think he has done an incredible job keeping our football ship afloat. We didn't have one spring practice, and he has not missed a beat. And we needed that spring practice, and he's found a way to kind of solve some problems with him and his staff. And so I'm really excited for him to get rolling.
Hunter Yurecek, our guest here on Ruskin and Zach. Sir, as always, we appreciate the time and the answers, and I know there's still a lot up in the air, and so we'll try and chat again before this football season gets going. Thank you.
Guys, thanks. Awesome. Enjoy the rest of your week, and thanks for having me on today.
Ruskin and Zach with you here. Delighted to have you with us. 866-285-4005. Coming up, we're going to talk to Mike Irwin from the Pig Trail Nation and his reflections and some stories on Eddie Sutton, who passed over the weekend at the age of 84. And we'll have thoughts from him on that and from us as well and everything going on this hour. It's not the only thing we're going to do, but it's going to take up a good portion of the time because, I mean, listen, name the list of coaches that actually created Hog fans. It's not a lengthy list. Broyles, Sutton, Nolan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who else?
Van Horn.
Van Horn, DeBryan. Definitely. Yeah, DeBryan.
I mean, look, it doesn't take a long time to call roll in that room.
Yeah, that's,
and he was one of them.
That's the room that he operated in. This program, and I'm gonna get to Mike to paint a better picture for us. But this program was irrelevant. 9 out of 11 losing seasons before Eddie Sutton came here. Last tournament appearance, Eddie Sutton got here in 74. The last prior NCAA tournament appearance was 1958. It was irrelevant as irrelevant can be. And I'd be curious to find out more about why an up-and-coming, a hotshot coaching prospect like Eddie Sutton came from Creighton to this place, which was not a destination job by any stretch of the imagination at the time.
No, he guy's a worker. I mean, he started as a GA to Henry Iba. I mean, that's a pretty good place to start. He coached in junior college. He coached in high school. He gets to Creighton. He has a 23-7 year. He goes, takes them to the tournament, yep. And then he arrives here. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, going from a tournament team at Creighton to coming here is a step backwards. Yep. There are very few coaches that you can point to in any program. Pick one where you say, that's the guy that got it started.
Yep.
He's the guy.
Yeah. My thought is that Arkansas basketball was in black and white, and when Eddie Sutton arrived, the program went into Technicolor, like that scene in The Wizard of Oz. Like everything that just popped into life with this program, and they took Barnhill from a place with dirt in the floor to Barnhill being a place where you could not get in. I was just asking, I am aware of this program and grew up a fan of this program because of my parents, like a lot of you out there. So I asked my dad, who never got, and this is a testament to this program. My dad told me he went to his first Razorback basketball game in 77 or 78, and it was in Little Rock because you couldn't get a ticket to Barnhill. It was not possible. It was a waiting list, and my dad didn't go to a Barnhill game till the 90s. as die hard of a fan, and I'm sure a lot of you may have a similar story, he made it a destination. You talk about, of course, obviously the product helped sell it, but bringing in the Hog Wild Band, the Pep Band with Jim Robkin, imitating the Cougar Brass from Houston.
Absolutely.
That was Eddie's idea. I mean, there are still blueprints on how a Razorback basketball game night functions that go back to little things Eddie Sutton had put the program back in the 70s. So it's a remarkable legacy. And this is an interesting note, too, I thought, is as a player or a coach, Arkansas never beat Eddie Sutton. When he was a player in college, he beat Arkansas every time. And then when he came back, as a coach, mm-hmm. against Arkansas, so he was 7-0 against Arkansas.
That's
as a player and coach.
In addition
to all the great wins he had here.
It's funny you mentioned that. I mean, I think nationally he's probably going to be remembered more for his time at Oklahoma State, mostly because it was his last major stop. But I can remember in the 94-95 Final Four, somebody asked him about the possibility of playing Arkansas, and I don't think in that room, I don't think it had dawned on him, or he had given a whole lot of thought to that possibility, because that would have been 7-1. Yes. That Arkansas team would have run all over the floor. But I was talking to some folks over in Stillwater, and I think from a national perspective, the Arkansas job gets lost a little bit. We remember it because of it's the launching point for what Nolan did. But from a national perspective, Oklahoma State is really where he shined.
Yeah.
He was, what I was looking this up just a minute ago. He's 260-75 as the head coach at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. 120-8 at Barnhill. 120-8.
Eight losses in 11 years? At 10 years, something like that?
120-8.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's why. And you know, that kept going and kept going. And that's why, I mean, you couldn't get in the place. People, it's so difficult to understand that now because the arena seats 19,000 people. And if you want to go to a game, you can make it happen in 2020. There was a time not that long ago in the grand scheme of things where you couldn't get in the place.
No.
And they had to play. They would play three games in Little Rock and one game in Pine Bluff later on in the arrangement. But they would move over. They'd have to go around the state, mm-hmm. because you couldn't get in to Barnhill Arena.
Now, I mean, you know, we've had Joe Klein on, we've had Scott Hastings on, and they've all talked about, you know, the Hall of Fame and all that. Look, the Kentucky part of his career is part of the Eddie Sutton story.
Yeah.
And it didn't end well. Yeah. And, you know, you can say, well, that now he is in, has already been inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame,
yeah,
which is not the one, you know, that
this
Michael Jordan's in.
This
not
is the Naismith was the one that happened this, is this year. Yeah.
Right. So, he, you know, he was in the College Basketball Hall of Fame. He's, you know, you can call him a Hall of Famer, but you could hear the passion when we've talked to Joe Klein or we've talked to Scott Hastings, and it, you hear the passion for him that those players had. That to me speaks more about what he was. You know, I was listening to Corey Williams just before on halftime talk about he played for him at Oklahoma State. Same sort of passion for Eddie Sutton, the man. And I think that's probably more impressive to me than, you know, his coaching record, which has 804 wins.
Yeah. There are, I mean, every player is loyal to their coach. It, wherever you go, you will find players loyal, but it's different with him. And you can have 20 different people. And you can tell that it is just a different admiration, loyalty, love that his players have than you get in the most of the player coach relationship, which is always something that produces a lot of lifelong connections.
I think if there are two photographs in just burned into Razorback fans' memory throughout the basketball program. It's one, it's the Sports Illustrated cover of Scottie Thurman hitting the shot.
Yes.
Number two on that list is Sidney Moncrief
dunking.
And that happened, the Hawks. That happened almost 50 years ago. Yeah. I mean, those are the two moments. Yeah. Program-wide, in a program that's won a lot of basketball games, yeah, those are the two.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that put Arkansas basketball on the map. And it was quick. It wasn't a gradual thing. They took off, literally. When Marvin Delf, Ron Brewer, and Sidney Moncrief got there, and then it just extended into the 80s. Beat some great teams, Houston teams, Phi Slamma Jamma.
Mm-hmm.
Great teams. And then, you know, Nolan, when he got here, this thing was ready to go. I mean, it was built. He had the fan base. He had everything he needed to succeed, and then Nolan just took it, and it just launched like a rocket.
And again, a lot of Razorback fans were created in that era. I mean, you may not have thought anything about, but then all of a sudden, Eddie Sutton comes on the scene. Then the triplets come on the scene. And all of a sudden, you can't live without either seeing or hearing or knowing what happened in those games in that era. And it was more difficult to see them back then. I would have to do more research on this. But I bet that's around the same time that televising the game statewide on Channel 7 on tape delay, I believe, initially. They'd run it after the 10 o'clock news, became more and more popular and really necessary if you wanted people to see these games, because you couldn't get into that place, as we've talked about.
Yeah. Three SWC tournaments, one SEC tournament, won the Big 12 twice.
Signature Arkansas win the North Carolina game, probably, where Ballantyne hit the shot.
Probably.
U.S. Reed hit a shot, of course, to beat Louisville.
Everybody remembers that one, but there were so many along the way. I mean, the games with Houston, you know, those games were battles. Yeah. But I think if you're just going to rip off one, that's probably it. I mean, if you're just going to say, okay, give me Eddie Sutton's crowning moment, it's beating number one North Carolina in Pine Bluff.
Yeah. Those are the bigger games. I think, and I may be wrong about this, but it feels like the Arkansas-Texas basketball feud really took off with Penders and Nolan on the two opposing sidelines. Yeah. I'm Arkansas fans have hated Texas for a long, long time, but I think of the moment, those Houston teams were probably the formidable Southwest Conference foe back then. All right, so we will take your text on this, and when we come back, Mike Irwin's scheduled to join us from Pig Trail Nation. By the way, Mike and Eddie get to Northwest Arkansas kind of at the same same time frame, early mid-70s there. So we will discuss that and more coming up here on Ruskin and Zach. Stay where you are. Ruskin and Zach with you here. Delighted to have you with us. 866-285-4005. Coming up, we're going to talk to Mike Irwin from the Pig Trail Nation and his reflections and some stories on Eddie Sutton, who passed over the weekend at the age of 84. And we'll have thoughts from him on that and from us as well and everything going on this hour. It's not the only thing we're going to do, but it's going to take up a good portion of the time because, I mean, listen, name the list of coaches that actually created Hog fans. It's not a lengthy list. Broyles, Sutton, Nolan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who else?
Van Horn.
Van Horn, DeBryan. Definitely. Yeah, DeBryan.
I mean, look, it doesn't take a long time to call roll in that room.
Yeah, that's,
and he was one of them.
That's the room that he operated in. This program, and I'm gonna get to Mike to paint a better picture for us. But this program was irrelevant. 9 out of 11 losing seasons before Eddie Sutton came here. Last tournament appearance, Eddie Sutton got here in 74. The last prior NCAA tournament appearance was 1958. It was irrelevant as irrelevant can be. And I'll be curious to find out more about why an up-and-coming, a hotshot coaching prospect like Eddie Sutton came from Creighton to this place, which was not a destination job by any stretch of the imagination at the time.
No, the guy's a worker. I mean, he started as a GA to Henry Iba. I mean, that's a pretty good place to start. He coached in junior college. He coached in high school. He gets to Creighton. He has a 23-7 year. He goes, takes them to the tournament, yep. And then he arrives here.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, going from a tournament team at Creighton to coming here is a step backwards. Yep. There are very few coaches that you can point to in any program. Pick one where you say, that's the guy that got it started.
Yep.
He's the guy.
Yeah. My thought is that Arkansas basketball was in black and white, and when Eddie Sutton arrived, the program went into Technicolor, like that scene in The Wizard of Oz. Like everything that just popped into life with this program, and they took Barnhill from a place with dirt in the floor to Barnhill being a place where you could not get in. I was just asking, I am aware of this program and grew up a fan of this program because of my parents, like a lot of you out there. So I asked my dad, who never got, and this is a testament to this program. My dad told me he went to his first Razorback basketball game in 77 or 78, and it was in Little Rock because you couldn't get a ticket to Barnhill. It was not possible. It was a waiting list. And my dad didn't go to a Barnhill game till the 90s. as die hard of a fan, and I'm sure a lot of you may have a similar story, he made it a destination. You talk about, of course, obviously the product helped sell it, but bringing in the Hog Wild Band, the Pep Band with Jim Robkin, imitating the Cougar Brass from Houston.
Absolutely.
It was Eddie's idea. I mean, there are still blueprints on how a Razorback basketball game night functions that go back to little things Eddie Sutton had put the program back in the 70s. So it's a remarkable legacy. And this is an interesting note, too, I thought, is as a player or a coach, Arkansas never beat Eddie Sutton. When he was a player in college, he beat Arkansas every time. And then when he came back, as a coach, mm-hmm. against Arkansas, so he was 7-0 against Arkansas.
That's
as a player and coach. In addition to all the great wins he had here.
It's funny you mention that. I mean, I think nationally he's probably going to be remembered more for his time at Oklahoma State, mostly because it was his last major stop. But I can remember in the 94-95 Final Four, somebody asked him about the possibility of playing Arkansas, and I don't think in that room, I don't think it had dawned on him, or he had given a whole lot of thought to that possibility, because that would have been 7-1. Yes. That Arkansas team would have run all over the floor. But I was talking to some folks over in Stillwater, and I think from a national perspective, the Arkansas job gets lost a little bit. We remember it because of it's the launching point for what Nolan did. But from a national perspective, Oklahoma State is really where he shined.
Yeah.
He was I was looking this up just a minute ago. He's 260-75 as the head coach at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. 120-8 at Barnhill. 120-8.
Eight losses in 11 years? At 10 years, something like that?
120-8.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why, and you know, that kept going and kept going, and that's why, I mean, you couldn't get in the place. People, it's so difficult to understand that now because the arena seats 19,000 people, and if you want to go to a game, you can make it happen in 2020. There was a time not that long ago in the grand scheme of things where you couldn't get in the place.
No.
And they had to play. They would play three games in Little Rock and one game in Pine Bluff later on in the arrangement. But they would move over. They'd have to go around the state because you couldn't get in to Barnhill Arena.
Now, I mean, you know, we've had Joe Klein on, we've had Scott Hastings on, and they've all talked about, you know, the Hall of Fame and all that. Look, the Kentucky part of his career is part of the Eddie Sutton story.
Yeah.
And it didn't end well. Yeah. And, you know, you can say, well, that now he is in, has already been inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame,
yeah,
which is not the one, you know, that Michael Jordan's in. This is the
Naismith was the one that happened this year. Yeah.
Right. So, he was in the College Basketball Hall of Fame. He's, you know, you can call him a Hall of Famer, but you could hear the passion when we've talked to Joe Klein or we've talked to Scott Hastings, and you hear the passion for him that those players had. That to me speaks more about what he was. You know, I was listening to Corey Williams just before on halftime talk about he played for him at Oklahoma State. Same sort of passion for Eddie Sutton, the man. And I think that's probably more impressive to me than, you know, his coaching record, which has 804 wins.
Yeah. Every player is loyal to their coach. Wherever you go, you will find players loyal, but it's different with him. And you can have 20 different people. And you can tell that it is just a different admiration, loyalty, love that his players have than you get in the most of the player coach relationship, which is always something that produces a lot of lifelong connections.
I think if there are two photographs just burned into Razorback fans' memory throughout the basketball program, it's one, it's the Sports Illustrated cover of Scottie Thurman hitting the shot.
Yes.
Number two on that list is Sidney Moncrief
dunking.
And that happened, almost 50 years ago. I mean, those are the two moments. Program-wide, in a program that's won a lot of basketball games, those are the two.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that put Arkansas basketball on the map. And it was quick. It wasn't it wasn't a gradual thing. They took off, literally. When Marvin Delph, Ron Brewer, and Sidney Moncrief got there, and then it just extended into the 80s. Beat some great teams, Houston teams, Phi Slamma Jamma.
Mm-hmm.
Great teams. And then, you know, Nolan, when he got here, this thing was ready to go. I mean, it was built. He had the fan base. He had everything he needed to succeed, and then Nolan just took it, and it just launched like a rocket.
And again, a lot of Razorback fans were created in that era. I mean, you may not have thought anything about, but then all of a sudden, Eddie Sutton comes on the scene, then the triplets come on the scene, and all of a sudden, you can't live without either seeing or hearing or knowing what happened in those games in that era. And it was more difficult to see them back then. I would have to do more research on this, but I bet that's around the same time that televising the game statewide on Channel 7, on tape delay, I believe, initially. They'd run it after the 10 o'clock news, became more and more popular and really necessary if you wanted people to see these games, because you couldn't get into that place, as we've talked about.
Yeah. But three SWC tournaments, one SEC tournament, won the Big 12 twice.
Signature Arkansas win the North Carolina game, probably, where Ballantyne hit the shot.
Probably
U.S. Reed hit a shot, of course, to beat Louisville.
But I think everybody remembers that one. But there were so many along the way. I mean, the games with Houston.
Yeah.
Those games were battles. Yeah. But I think if you're just going to rip off one, that's probably it. I mean, if you're just going to say, okay, give me Eddie Sutton's crowning moment, it's beating number one North Carolina in Pine Bluff.
Yeah. Those are the bigger games. I think, and I may be wrong about this, but it feels like the Arkansas-Texas basketball feud really took off with Penders and Nolan on the two opposing sidelines. Yeah. I'm an Arkansas fan. I've hated Texas for a long, long time, but I think of the moment, those Houston teams were probably the formidable Southwest Conference foe back then. All right, so we will take your text on this, and when we come back, Mike Irwin's scheduled to join us from Pig Trail Nation. By the way, Mike and Eddie get to Northwest Arkansas kind of on the same time frame, early mid-70s there. So We will discuss that and more coming up here on Ruskin and Zach. Stay where you are.
Richard's Country Meat Market is now offering curbside pickup, so you can still make that perfectly flavored gourmet meal from home. To place your order ahead, call 479-443-0000. Whether you're cooking up an inspired new recipe or favorite family dish, call ahead for curbside pickup at Richard's Country Meat Market for the best meats in town. Richard's has everything you need for the grill. Feast with ease with Richard's ready-to-grill kebabs, bacon-wrapped fillets, perfectly flavored gourmet beef patties, quarter-pound beef franks, and shop-made sausages. All of Richard's exceptional meat will make your meals at home more flavorful. Plus, Richard's has the best selection of fresh fish, like salmon, tilapia, and cod he receives fresh twice a week from Pacific Seafood. Looking for a quick dinner idea? Grab a simple supper for only $5 from Richard's Country Meat Market. Call ahead for your curbside pickup at 479-443-0000. That's 443-0000. Richard's Country Meat Market in Fayetteville, one block east of College and Rolling Hills Drive.
Cupid's Lingerie is open in Bentonville next to Guess Who Liquor and in Tawnytown next to Jose's. Spice up your unexpected staycation with Cupid's Lingerie. Shop Cupid's for the hottest lingerie and adult novelty at shopcupids.com. Check Facebook for hours. Make staying home fun with Cupid's. Testosterone levels naturally drop in men with age, often causing a lack of energy, anxiety, weight gain, diminished libido, and performance. Don't suffer in silence. Call Dr. Gentry at Maverick Male Medical in Fayetteville for your free consult at 305-8206. Guess Who Liquor at Rainbow Curve in Bentonville has launched home delivery services to complement their curbside pickup. Download their app from the App Store or Google Play by searching Guess Who Liquor. Browse their incredible inventory of wine, beer, and spirits. Pickup hours 10 to 9 and delivery from 12 to 8.
The Northwest Arkansas Food Bank is here to help during this difficult time. If you or a loved one needs food, resources are available. Visit nwafoodbank.org and click the Find Food tab at the top for a complete listing of agencies in all four counties available to help you get the food you need.
If you drink and drive, it's not just your plans for the evening that get messed up. It's your plans for the future. We're talking fines and fees that will keep you broke for a long time. We're talking about having to ask friends and frenemies for rides for months. And that career you were thinking about? Well, DWIs show up on background checks and they don't make your resume any better. So think of a better plan, okay?
Don't lose control of your future with a DWI. Plan a sober ride before you go out so you don't drink, drive, go to jail.
Sponsored by the Arkansas Highway Safety Office, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and this station.
At AutoZone, we've always been here to help you get what you need to go where you need. That hasn't changed. Needing some battery help? We've got you. Whether it's a free battery test or a free charge, we can help you get started again. And if it's time for a replacement, we've got a full selection of batteries starting at $79.99. That's why we're America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone. AutoZone. Based on data from the NPD Group Incorporated, Car Care Track, 12 months ending December 2019.
Every home has things it needs, things that need to be maintained, fixed, or replaced. The Home Depot is here to help you get it done. You can easily find what you need on our app, order it online with the push of a button, and have it brought to your door with free delivery on over a million items. We have the essentials you need, the online know-how you may need to do it yourself, and low prices that make it all possible. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Ah, the bull elk's bugle, one of nature's most wondrous sounds. That is not a bull elk, that's Kim. Her RV sewage tank is spewing all over her camper. Way, way out in the middle of elk country. Yep, there's an elk. And that's Kim. It's wild out there. When it gets too wild, Progressive has your RV covered. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
You check things all the time, like your email every 10 seconds or your ex's Instagram. But what about checking something as important as your credit? Well, Discover makes it quick, easy, and best of all, free. Discover is now offering FICO credit scores, the score used by 90% of top lenders for free, even if you're not a customer. Checking your score won't hurt your credit, and you can check each month for changes always for free. The Discover Credit Scorecard, free for everyone. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply.
As our nation battles COVID-19, every job in a medical facility is critical. Join the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Housekeeping, food service, supply techs, and other support staff. These people help save lives in medical centers, outpatient clinics, and community living centers. We're hiring in every state, and we've made the process faster. Will you join us on the front line? Visit va.gov/join us to find out how.
This is ESPN 99.5. Live across Arkansas,
this is Reskin and Zach.
We have returned here on Reskin and Zach, and the podcast is available for your listening pleasure right now, wherever you get podcasts, ESPN995.com, hitthatline.com, Apple, Spotify, and all the podcast places. And you can check that out whenever you want. We go now to the Williams Tractor Hotline, and we will visit with Mike Irwin, the Dean of Reporters covering Razorback Sports. He's with the Pig Trail Nation, and he joins us now. Mike, thanks for the time this afternoon.
Glad to be here, guys.
So one of the things that when we start to think about Eddie Sutton, could you paint a picture for us of like Barnhill Arena circa 1974 and just kind of how dilapidated a facility it was then?
Well, 75 was my first year, but it still wasn't renovated. And Eddie was here, but I'd sit in there and watch practice, and it'd be in the afternoon, and they had all these tiny windows across the top of that building, which was basically a big, giant metal building. And the sun would come shining through those windows, and there was about where the court ended on the south side all the way over to what's now the end of the building, that was all dirt. And there was just nasty dirt flying in the air. You could see all that dust, and I remember thinking, man, I can't stay in here very long. I'd probably come out of here with some kind of lung disease. So it was a really depressing place. It was, you know, even that year they had it full, but it only held about 4,000. And the transformation that took place was just amazing. I mean, they took what I thought there's no way to make this a decent place to play basketball. And the architects really did a good job, and they did it in two phases. But by that second year when it was fully renovated, I mean, it just took off. I mean, I've never seen a place like that. I mean, he won 94% of his games in that building. That's, like, insane. Who does that? That means that you have, like, almost no chance of winning ever when you come in to play Arkansas. So he really made that building.
I'm sitting in a crate in 5 or 4 that when Eddie Sutton shows up at the University of Arkansas, it barely makes a ripple. People are kind of throwing up their hands saying, who is Eddie Sutton?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting story, because Frank was in his first year as AD, and everybody always says this stuff about Frank was afraid that people would surpass his legacy or whatever. It was nonsense. He really wanted a better athletic department overall. And at that point, Arkansas had never generated revenue in anything but football. And he had talked to some other ADs that said, hey, basketball is getting to be a big thing. You could get in those days, you got to keep your NCAA money. You didn't have to share it with other teams in the conference. The teams that went got the money. And so if you could get a big fan base and had a nice arena, you could really generate some money out of basketball. And he hired Eddie Sutton under that idea. He said, look, I'll bring you in here, but you got to put butts in those seats. You got to fill it up. You got to get us into the tournament. We need to make some money out of this program. And Eddie was all over it. And I think that's one of the reasons he hired him, because he was so enthusiastic about making that happen. And he had to go around to all these Razorback clubs and talk to them and get them fired up. And they weren't very fired up in the beginning. But Eddie was a salesman. And then it helped that he got Brewer, Moncrief, and Delph right off the bat. That sort of made that thing work. I still remember a game against Southwest Missouri, and it was 1975 in December. And each one of those guys played well in that game, and people just went nuts because they were all three from Arkansas, and you just liked them. You liked the differences. I mean, Moncrief was intense. Brewer was kind of smooth and silky, and Delph just chewed the ball. you always had the impression he could just turn his head away from the basket and still make a 40-foot shot. So the three of them just really helped make that thing work. But it really was all about Frank wanted to use the money from basketball to improve other facilities, and that's exactly what happened. They built that indoor track and tennis center, and then they put a artificial surface over George Cope Field, which was unheard of in any place but Texas. They built some stands and a actual press box, and the Hyper building was built, but Frank had the money to lease the pool, and Arkansas had this really nice pool for their swimming team. So within just a couple of 3 years, Frank totally upgraded the athletic facilities for all the other sports, which eventually led to women's sports becoming a much bigger deal. But that all started with money that Eddie helped generate.
We're talking with Mike Irwin here on Ruskin and Zach. Fair to say that Eddie Sutton taught a generation of Razorback fans not only the game of basketball, but to love the game of basketball?
Well, he was, when he got here, and you got to remember, the only other coaches I'd been around on a college level was an NAI school in East Texas, and it was a terrible situation. They didn't talk much, and they didn't let you talk to their athletes. You didn't go to practice. So I get here, and I can't believe it. I mean, he just got his door open. You could just walk into his office. You could watch all of his practice, and he was always talking about educating the fans. I had a wireless mic on him one day in practice because he wanted me to do a feature on how he was going to coach defense because he wanted the fans to understand that. And there was a point where he left and went upstairs, and I took the headsets off, but then he didn't come back, so I put them back on. And he was on the phone with Bobby Knight, and they were just going nuts about the fact that fans just wanted offense. That's all they wanted. And it was hard to coach players to play defense when they'd come out of high school just wanting to shoot jump shots. And Bobby was like, you know, his way of doing it was just to kick him in the butt. But Eddie was saying, we've got to educate the fans. We got to make them understand that a 58-54 game is okay if you win. And he spent the whole time he was here educating the fans. And then the thing that happened was when they got in the stands, they understood his system. And honestly, it made them better fans. It made the atmosphere better.
What do you make of when you hear guys like Joe Klein or Scott Hastings or Ron Brewer talk about their admiration for him, not as a basketball coach, but as sort of a pseudo father figure to these guys?
Well, because he really was more than just basketball. He wasn't one of these guys who was just totally obsessed. He had a great sense of humor. He was fun to talk to, but he also had their back in situations. Everybody remembers U.S. Reed's shot against Louisville, but what they don't remember is when they got up to Indiana State and Reed got double screwed. He was tripped, and then they called traveling on him when he didn't travel, and that really decided the game. And U.S. talked about how Eddie was, you know, in that locker room saying, man, you don't have anything to hang your head over. That was not you. That was a referee. And then Joe talking about the way Eddie stepped in after his own dad died and kind of became a father figure to him. He was just like that. He was totally devoted to his wife right up until she died, and he was just a great guy. And let me just tell you guys, the biggest issue we all have in this business is coaches who just are hypersensitive about being criticized. I can't stand that when that happens. And you'd think they'd know going in it was part of the job. But Eddie, I remember one time I wrote something negative about him or put it on the air, and I knew he'd be mad or figured he would be, and I came over to Barnhill all expecting him to jump all over me, and he was just laughing about it. And he finally came up to me. He finally said toward the end of that conversation, yeah, he says, you're okay. He says, that was a good piece. He always called anything you did on TV a piece. That was a good piece. But he said, I just want you to know, you're in real trouble with the student newspaper. Those guys hate you. He was laughing, you know, it was a joke. Like, oh, boy, those guys are going to get me. But that's the way he handles situations like that.
We're talking with Mike Irwin here on Ruskin and Zach, Mike with the Pig Trail Nation. The end of Arkansas, I've read something over the weekend where that's one of his biggest regrets is how he handled the end at Arkansas and going to Kentucky.
Yeah, he had a drinking problem, and it really surfaced the last couple of years, and he was bizarre to be around. The change was unbelievable. He said things at press conferences that didn't make any sense. You know, Bob Holt, he'd always come back after, you said this, And, you know, Eddie would kind of try to blow it off. I remember one day he basically in a press conference implied that college basketball refs were tied into Vegas and were throwing games to make money in Vegas, which was an outrageous claim. But then when Bob pressed him on it, he just kind of backed off. But it was just a very strange period. And I personally believe that he would have been fired eventually because he didn't. Frank wanted him to go get treatment, and Eddie didn't want to do it. And before any of that could come to a head, Kentucky hired him, and then we know what happened at Kentucky. But I also have tremendous empathy for Eddie Sutton because I've known alcoholics. And I'm telling you, they've got some kind of a gene or something in them that makes them different from other people. He tried and tried and tried to break that habit. He rehabbed a couple of times, and it just keeps coming back. And it's just so hard to deal with. And I think he always regretted that part of it. But you can't live your life that way. You know, you have to. He did come back from that whole Kentucky thing and fashioned a second career for himself at his alma mater. And he was very well loved over there, the way he handled that plane crash that handled there and brought their program back and caused that arena to be, renovated to what it is today. He was a tremendously positive influence on college basketball.
You mentioned the Oklahoma State. I was talking to some writers over in Oklahoma State yesterday, and it seems that his legacy, you know, at least amongst, you know, when they write the Eddie Sutton story, is going to be tied to that Oklahoma State job. That's what everybody kind of remembers him for. The Kentucky sure. thing is sort of a side note, but people forget the great job he did at Arkansas. Talk to me a little bit about that Oklahoma State program that he took over and took teams that were quite honestly not that talented to Final Fours.
Well, he did the same thing there that he did here. He just, because of him, it became a huge spectator sport, and that's why they had to renovate the place. And he filled it up, and he got on TV. One of his greatest strengths was being on television because, keep in mind, guys, especially in those days, when a game was over, especially in the NCAA tournament, you'd always have some guy like Billy Packer or earlier Al McGuire. They'd bring you over and talk to you, and he was so good in situations like that. But he would also zing those guys. And that's why Arkansas fans liked him, because there was a perception in those days, wow, you pulled off this big upset. You beat whoever. And Eddie would kind of like zing them, like, you don't know what you're talking about. This is not an upset. And so the fans loved him for that. And then for the same reason, they loved him at Oklahoma State, with the difference being he was one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, he was an alum. And I think that he was really, really happy there, able to come back and kind of give something back to that school where he played basketball. And he was, as a player, he really was hard on Arkansas. I think you didn't want to play against him. He was a good college player.
Well, as a player and a coach, he went 7-0 against Arkansas. I saw Hogstats tweeting about that earlier on the weekend. We're talking with Mike Irwin here on Ruskin and Zach. Another famous day that Eddie Sutton was presiding over, and one of those interviews you talked about was the day that he was talking to Al McGuire after Arkansas upset North Carolina in Pine Bluff. Obviously, television had a large role in it, but didn't they play the day before? There's a lot of weird circumstance around that 84 North Carolina game in Pine Bluff.
Yeah, they played SMU, and they had to fly in on the plane, and it was one of those dinky planes they fly on in those days, and I think it was a prop plane, and it was going all over the place. The players were kind of queasy, and they got to the motel or hotel, wherever they were, and they had to hurry and go over and warm up. And I think, honestly, because he didn't have time to really totally prepare them for that game, they probably didn't fully understand who they were about to play. And sometimes that helps. But it's a testament to his coaching ability, because you talk about a team that was loaded. I mean, North Carolina was number one, but they had all these great players. And Arkansas just kind of tag-teamed Michael Jordan. He had a great day, but Arkansas had several players in that 10, 8, 10, 12-point range. Joe, I think, had 16 or 17 or whatever. But Charles Ballantyne was just Mr. Cool there at the end, and he made the shot. And that's something nobody will ever forget, you know. It was just one of those Razorback history things. And Joe always, I think he said on that Michael Jordan thing, Last Dance or whatever that was, I didn't watch much of it, but he said something about he reminded Michael Jordan of that any chance he got. You know, just want you to remember, we beat your butt.
What is his place in Arkansas athletics history? I know it kind of gets marred by the way that he left, but I mean, there's Broyles, there's Nolan, there's McDonald. Where's his sort of peg in that hierarchy?
I think because of he left and because of what happened, he's just kind of a little rung below Nolan. He didn't win a national championship, and he did leave, but he still, you know, they still remember him. They still love him. They love him for Sidney and all those U.S. Reed and all those guys, Scott Hastings. And probably the best way I can describe it is Eddie Sutton or Nolan Richardson's name is on that court, but Eddie's name is over on the practice facility, and that's kind of the next best thing. It's just right a step below Nolan. And Nolan, you know, he's revered, national championship and all that. So he's right in there with all of them, but maybe just slightly below Nolan.
And, of course, he has his name on the court over at Stillwater at Gallagher-Iba Arena. Absolutely. Mike Irwin, Pig Trail Nation, thank you so much, Mike, for the remembering today. We appreciate it.
See you guys.
All right, Mike and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. Yeah, the